Trick of Delight. Written by Calico Lynx, Cassiopeia 721, Katsuki 07, Raindrops 0, and Theoretica. Read by Quetzal Quattle. Summary. Fate has her eyes on Izuku. Author's notes. Hey, this fic is a collaborative event between so many amazing writers. We each wrote a few hundred words, then passed it on to the next person, all without discussing plot. The order of writers is this. Raindrop Zero, me, Katsuki 07, Cassiopeia 721, Calico Lynx, Theoretica, and finally back to me. I had a ton of fun writing with everyone, and I highly suggest checking out their profiles for more quality fics. Special thanks to NWA for hosting this event. Hope you enjoy. He's sitting on a throne draped in velvet. It's a tacky thing, created of spray paint gold and cheap plastic. The armrests are flimsy like sogging cardboard in the rain, and the seat is three times too wide for a child like Izuku. Izuku shifts and winces at the barbs poking at his back. The lady in front of him smiles sickly sweet, sugar cubes drizzled with honey. "And you, my dear child," she says, voice echoing in the empty room with only two figures and a fake throne in the center. "Would you like to hear your fortune now?" Gnawing on his lip, he pinpoints his gaze on the lady's shoulder. She reeks of jasmine perfume, the one mom hates, and every sliver of bare skin is adorned with silver chains and jewels. He almost coughs up his aching lungs, barely holding it in. The thick scent of sugar smells like the factory smoke hanging over their heads. Izuku shrugs. I guess so. Izuku doesn't believe in this kind of magic. He doesn't believe in splayed-out tarot cards or sparkling love potions or wands rumored to set a village ablaze. Izuku certainly doesn't believe in the so-called witch crouched behind a mahogany table, her hands cupping a clouded crystal ball. What he does believe in, however, are quirks, minuscule fragments of ancient spells and crafted poisons flowing through someone's veins, their soul. The air of spellbooks are long gone, leaving behind only specks of power to distribute among them. Everyone but Izuku. Fortune-telling quirks are nearly impossible, with only Sir Night-Eye, the famous mage, holding its power. Then here's this lady, pretending to hold the strings of fate within her hands and gaze into them. She tilts her head. The chattering and shouts from the festival outside fade. A chill permeates Izuku's bones. He blinks, and the heater resting inside the ragged tent whirls to life. "Must have been the wind," his mind whispers. She opens her mouth, dipping her pinky finger in a rusting goblet. When Izuku tilts his head the right way, the liquid inside shimmers. "Wouldn't your mother be sad if you walked out with what your future told?" Izuku stills. He didn't tell her that. Mom isn't by his side, eyes darting frantically between her precious son and a definitely maybe a scammer, which, murmuring under her breath about a wrong diagnosis and the medic is insane, and it's just a little late, that's all. Dad isn't here either. He never is, ever since Izuku got diagnosed as quirkless a few months ago. In Kachan, Izuku doesn't like to think about him anymore. "No need to be worried, little one. I won't harm you." She's smiling, always smiling, and Izuku notices one of her teeth is missing. It's a gaping hole, dark like the cosmos threatening to engulf him, dark like a pit leading to hell. She grins wider. None of her teeth are missing anymore. They shine pearly white in the dim lighting, no gaps to be seen. Something catches the corner of Izuku's gaze. He snaps to attention, shoulders quivering and breath shaking. Why did Mom leave me alone in here? And she isn't old anymore, either. Her wrinkles morphed into smooth porcelain skin, and gaudy jewels into freshly woven flower crowns, real flower crowns, like the ones the princess wears on days when the sky's blue shows through the smog. Now, she's a young maiden clad in a flowing spring dress. Not everything can be a trick of the light, can it? He blinks rapidly, eyelashes gently fluttering against freckled cheek. When he opens his eyes again, his vision fills with brilliant greens of emerald and jade and olive. Sunlight filters through the thick canopy and illuminates the dew hanging on the undergrowth. What? Izuku whispers. He sucks in a lungful of air. For once, it feels like he can breathe. There's no more worn velvet cushioning his legs, no more incense choking the tent of its air, no more muted sounds of the school festival in the background. Izuku can hear the merry chirping of birds, and somewhere far away, the steady rush of a waterfall. Izuku doesn't remember seeing a view like this. If he had, he surely would have known. Then why does this place seem so familiar? Its ancient history scrawled into torn pages, then passed from generation to generation. The forests wilted, the grasses died, the flowers turned plastic, and the rivers dried. But this? He reaches out to touch the foliage when his head suddenly starts spinning. Swirling colors flash across his eyes, and there's an incessant buzzing in his temples. Izuku groans when he sits upright in the sorry excuse of a chair. Wait, a chair? Looking around, he realizes he's back in the fortune teller's tent. The old lady grins, lips stretched too widely to be natural. What just happened? He asks the old lady flower maiden scammer witch fairy. She doesn't reply. Instead, she glides to the tent's flap and ushers him out. Izuku gags, musk creeping down his throat, smog piercing at his eyes. The festival's noise floods into his veins. And tucked in between the candied apple stall and the fortune-telling tent is Mom. Mom! Izuku rushes to grab her legs, burying his face into her skirt. He breathes in the smell of cheap detergent. Your son is destined for greatness, ma'am. The lady bows to them, frazzled gray hair falling to her eyes, and as she looks up, her gaze locks onto Izuku. Just give it some time. He and his mom walk away, through crowds of his classmates playing, not with Izuku, never with Izuku, in carts full of good food. She's saying something with a bright look, bright enough to mimic the sun that never comes out. But Izuku can't hear her. When he sneaks a peek back at the tent, it's gone. The next day, when he asks his mom about the fortune teller, she just looks at him with confusion and asks, "Who are you talking about?" And when he goes back to where the witch was, there's nothing but stale fries and crumpled wrappers. Izuku tries to dismiss the odd events of that day as nothing more than a trick. The tent must have been moved, the fortune teller heading off to the next town. His mother must have been just too exhausted to recall the incident. It's no surprise, considering how she's always worn so thin by her long days in the factory. And what Izuku had seen was just an illusion, conjured up by the mix of thick, sticky sweet incense and heady jasmine perfume filling in the air, or by the light glancing off the woman's endless chains and jewels. After all, Izuku reminds himself, the future that the fortune teller had predicted for him, one of lush green undergrowth adorned with endless crystal-bright droplets of dew, of rich, loamy earth squishing between his toes, of crisp, clean air filled with the high, clear notes of calling birds, is an impossible one. There are none of the old forests left now, the lumber of their ancient trees used to construct the gold-crusted mansions of the wealthy. If there are any clear-throated birds left in this land, they are sitting stuffed in some merchant's cabinet, along with the other collected relics of bygone eras. There's no magic left in this world, no armored dragons guarding hordes of treasure, or great sorcerers performing incredible feats. The closest thing that remains is quirks, ragged scraps of the kind of power previous generations had wielded. His mother's ability to tug the tiny parts she works with in the factory into her hand with a twist of her wrist. The way Kachan can turn a pinch of sugar and a bit of cooking oil into a billowing explosion between his scarred, callous hands. The way Izuku's father coughed up sparks and smokes when he got angry. Izuku doesn't even have that, though. He can't pull objects to him, can't create explosions, can't breathe little spurts of fire when he concentrates. In a world where magic is already stretched to the breaking point, overextended between the souls of 1,000 dusty-faced factory workers and bent-backed coal workers, scraped thin like his mother trying to make her tiny pat of butter covered a full slice of bread. In that painfully magicless world, Izuku is the most magicless of all. So no, there's no way that Izuku is destined for the great forests of old, no way he is destined for the luxuriant shine of huge glossy leaves, for the riotous bursts of bright colors teeming a rich carpet on the forest floor, for the distant music of a waterfall. There's no way at all. He's dreamed of that possibility for too long. It's past time to give up and accept the reality he's left with. Magicless, destined to be another grunt in the factory, wishing for a gift, a quirk, isn't going to mysteriously manifest one for him. If wishes were horses, even beggars would ride, right? There are still those with stronger gifts in the world, throwbacks to the old days. His favorite idol, All Might, is one of those. Exceptionally strong and bright in a world doling by the damage inflicted to it. It always makes him sad, looking into the history of the world and seeing the way it was being broken down, taken apart. It is even sadder now, with a glimpse he had been gifted by the fortune teller. The scenes from times long past, times when the world was a beautiful and wondrous place. Before, he had only seen them in books, but now he's not only seen them, he had felt them, heard the speaking of birds, the rustle of wind through leaves, the music of the earth. Quietly, in between gazing at the flares of magic sparking from Kachan's hands, and memorizing equations to hopefully continue school instead of being sent to the fields, Izuku hopes. He hopes to see the world alive again. It's fruitless, he knows, but at least no one understands the meaning of a longing in his eyes.
Izuku decides to go for a walk, restless in his melancholy. His mom is out anyways, working the long hours required by the factory. He finds himself on the nearest bench, staring at the trash piled up on it. The sand, once pristine white, if the history books are correct, is now layers of gravel. The waves, muted shades of gray, lap weakly around his ankles. Walking out onto the pyre, he is staring out over the putrid waters when a voice speaks from behind him. "You're a long way from where you belong, aren't you?" He spins around to face the speaker, seeing the old fortune teller once more. "What are you doing here?"
"I came to see you, young man. You see, you have a great future ahead of you, but it comes at a cost. The ocean, the earth, it calls to you. I can feel her speak. She needs your help. It's time to start restoring the balance of the world, to bring the magic back, to heal her." The expression on the old woman's face was serious.
"But why me? I'm nobody, just a quirkless kid. Shouldn't it be someone like All Might? Someone strong?" He had a hard time believing that he could do anything to help anyone. "All Might is doing what he needs to be doing. The ocean chose you. But I'm..." Izuku stops, trying to figure out how to put his thoughts into the elegant words that adults could understand. I'm only 6. That was the reasoning his mom gave him for everything when he asked. Izuku, sweetie, you're only 6. You're not ready for that yet. Let yourself be a child, baby. You'll grow up soon. Ah, you are a smart one. Indeed, right now, as we stand, it is not supposed to be you. The ocean will call to you when you are ready, little sprout. It will call when you are older, when you are wiser, and your legs can hold themselves up against the pull of its waves. The woman kneels down slowly until their eyes are level and takes one of his tiny hands into 2 of her own. But remember this, child. Be brave. Be brave, Izuku, for the world needs you so very, very much. Then, with barely the whisper of a breeze, she was gone. Izuku, only 6 years old, watches the muddy sunset on a lifeless beach that night. Izuku. Izuku is 13. His legs can hold themselves up against the pool of the waves. His weight can shift the sand beneath his feet, and he can hear the sound of the water with every step. The ocean beckons him forth, just as the lady promised it would. He starts to hear its call in school that day, hears its cries as it sings him a beautiful, melancholy tune. Wait for me. He replies, looking out a dreary window as he ignores his lifeless lecture droning on about something of inconsequence. Wait, and I'll be right there. The ocean croons, and Izuku listens. Before he knows it, he finds himself panting, breathing in the stale, putrid air that he always has, standing on the same barren beach that he always did. He feels the ocean breeze with him, waves pushing and pulling in a rhythm of his every breath. Every inhale feels like salt water in a wound. Every exhale feels like the soothing touch of water after a scorching day. The world is dying of thirst, he thinks. Izuku, he hears again, and turns around to see his wonderful, hardworking, loving mother stare at him like he's a stranger. He lifts a hand up to his face in confusion and sees a soft green glow reflected onto the tips of his fingers. Ah, his eyes must be glowing. Izuku, what are you doing? He can hear the ocean getting louder, more incessant in its call. I'm making the world right, Mom. I think we all deserve a real future. This world isn't right with its gray and artificial hues. The world deserves to be healthy again, green and lively with magic and forests, and... Izuku, honey, you've never seen those before. He shook his head gently with a smile. I've seen a future where there's a future for everyone. I want that. I want there to be one for us all. The ocean's cries crescendo, and he knows he doesn't have much time. He takes a step forward towards its gray expanse. The once ashen sand turns pristine white under his toes, sandals long cast away to some unknown fate. I'm here, he thinks. I'm here. You waited. It's supposed to be me now, and I'm here. He looks back. Just for a second, to offer his mother one last smile. I'll come home safe, Mom. I promise. With that, he turns back to the ocean and sees the same woman he saw all those years ago, standing calmly in the waves several yards offshore. As he takes more steps through the sand, leaving more white kisses in his wake, he watches as her silver chains slough off of her like the ash rain mixture does from the rooftops in the sun, and sees her for who she truly is for the first time. Mother Earth smiles at him, warmer than anything this world has to offer, and reaches out her hand for him to take. Before. How intriguing, Mother Earth. drowning in robes of lilac and crowns of silver, murmurs as she peers into her crystal ball. She watches as the hazy vision of a toddler tumbles down the steps, landing in a pile of coal dust. The toddler begins to wail, and his poor mother scoops him up with a gentle frown. She continues to view, to gaze, to seek. The child, and his name is Izuku, grows, gnarled branches and scars imprinted on his arms, crisp leaves that shimmers green under the afternoon sun, dirt disguised as freckles smeared across his cheeks. There's no quirk in his soul, she realizes with a start, nearly knocking her crystal ball onto the ground. She leans in closer and slits her eyes. The boy has no quirk, yet something thrums underneath his skin, pulsing through his arteries like liquid gold. How intriguing, she repeats, as she watches the boy chase after his explosive once friend. Izuku trips into a pile of ashes. Gray flakes flutter on his eyelashes. He dusts himself off and continues to run. The mortals don't notice the sprout of green rising from where the boy once stood. The rest of the world, however, does.